the table again at the top of the sheet for those who weren't here, or those who were here and maybe could use a reminder. It's important for you to be the one to fill in this chart, not for me to just give it. That's why it's empty. For each of the malachos that are listed, to explain where this comes up in terms of wound care, and to say what the halacha is. The more information you put in for yourself, the better off you'll be. That's really what it comes down to. Those who weren't on the Zoom on Wednesday, really make sure you catch the recording, because without it, you'll be lost. So that would be a good idea. So that was the stitching discussion. We then started on the issue of kosher, the issue of tying a knot. And what we had said was the Shmir Shabbos Kehilchasa said, if you take a look at source number one, it's there on the sheet, Vim Efshar Lahashos Es Tfiras HaPetza Ad LaMotzai Shabbos, if you can wait with stitching the wound until after Shabbos, Lelo Kol Chashash Hara'as Matzav HaPatsua, without any concern for deterioration of the status of the injured person, Mikaven Sheish Tsarach Lasos Kesher Bechura Tfira Hareza Kesher Shal Kayama, you do need to tie off the stitches in order that they should actually stay, and that's considered an enduring knot. That's the problem. So we want to wait till after Shabbos if we can for the stitches because of the issue of the knot. We always wonder, if you're not a doctor, well, maybe you can just make the stitches and then just like have somebody hold the stitch, right, instead of tying it until after Shabbos. I'm not so sure that actually works. Talk to a medical professional. Yeah, Ariana.
Wouldn't it be the opposite of like the whole cause? Because the person that needs stitches, you have to drive them to the hospital, and then you can, or like call 911, and then you're getting to the hospital, and they're like, you know what, like you can wait till after Shabbos. But you already broke some of Shabbos to get there, so wouldn't it just not make sense to just do it right there, kind of?
So I'd say two things. Good question. But number one, you don't necessarily need to go to the hospital for stitches, meaning I have known doctors who actually keep this stuff at home, because they know someone's going to come to their house on Shabbos. So they're ready for it, and they have their supplies. And so you don't end up needing to go to the hospital for stitches necessarily. That's number one. But number two, we don't generally say, once you've already broken Shabbos, you might as well keep going. The fact that they did what they did because they didn't know, they didn't know what level of need there was justified. But now to do something that's not justified would be inappropriate. And even if it turns out that they went and it wasn't justified, in other words, they should have known better or whatever it was, still, we're not going to tell them now go ahead. Yeah, we would still tell them to wait. That, yeah. Julie.
So the fact that you can't tie it on Shabbos, so therefore you wouldn't even do the stitching in general. So
correct. You wouldn't do the stitching in the first place because you can't tie it. Again, if there is a way to stitch it and not tie it off, so that's great. If there is such a thing, if holding the threads, works, then okay, that's, I guess, a solution. But again, that's something for a medical professional to weigh in terms of whether that is helpful, effective. I imagine it has a lot to do with the type of wound and how close you are to the end of Shabbos. Yeah.
But if they don't stitch it up, then their condition will worsen, then you are allowed to tie the knot?
So when Rabbi Neuwirth, in source number one, when he says, without concern for deterioration, the question is, what does deterioration mean in order to justify the tying? In other words, you're talking about a biblical prohibition, right? Tying a knot is a biblical prohibition. So it would need to be like a deterioration that we're worried about, endangering the person's life. Yeah, whether due to bleeding, due to infection, due to something, in order to justify going that route. But then, yes, it would be justified if that were to be the case. Yeah. Oh.
So I'm almost sure like it was like really important because it was Shabbos day morning. So we called someone over. I don't know how she did that, she learned enough, but called someone and then they assessed it whether we should go to a hospital then to get it done.
Right, and presumably the person she called was a medical professional.
Yeah.
Not just like, you know, random friend. Yeah.
Yeah,
and you make that is, you look fine.
We also usually have a neighbor that we go to for other things and stuff, like she does it, so we never have to.
Mm-hmm. Got it. I mean, the other thing to keep in mind when we're talking about this whole thing is the possibility of having a non-Jew do it, which will reduce it to a derabanan, right? There is the issue of the Jew doing things to assist. You know, they say, can you turn this way or hold your nose that way or whatever it is. And that's something that we'll have to discuss in other topics. But you can reduce it to a derabanan. And then going back to Julie's question about, you know, what would justify doing it on Shabbos, if it's now only a derabanan, then let's say it's chol hashem bo sakana, right? Let's say you talk about a child or, you know, something like that. Then you have a justification. Okay. So the big question which comes up when you talk about tying a knot, it's relevant for stitches, but it's relevant directly for the tying of the knot in particular, is the one that somebody asked me when we first started talking about wound care, which is, what about dissolving stitches? What would you have said? If I told you you have a material which will dissolve on its own, it's not going to need to be cut and removed, would that be better or worse than using regular thread? Yeah, Rebecca. Right? You hear the argument? It's not an enduring knot. That makes it sound like it's better. Yeah, Toa? But you never untie it. So that makes it worse. Maybe. Abby?
Couldn't you also make the argument that, like, that's how long you were planning on having it endure for? Like, it did what it needed to do.
Hmm. It lasted as long as it needed to last. So now we're getting to a question. What is the definition of an enduring knot, right? Of kesher shel kayama, or permanent knot. What does permanent actually mean? Good. Julie, you're going to say? Same thing. Others? So these are exactly the questions that we should be asking here. We have a precedent for saying that something that will naturally deteriorate is not a problem, is not called permanent. To Gemara at the very end of Maseches Shabbos. If you take a look at source number 2, this is the last Mishnah in Maseches Shabbos. They're talking about a measuring issue. They needed to measure a window for certain halachic purposes. I don't want to get into that because it's a distraction here, but they needed to measure a window. We don't measure things in general on Shabbos. However, measuring for a mitzvah is permitted. So, Umaisa bimei aviv shol Rabbi Tzadok ubimei Abashol ben Botnis. It happened during the time of Rabbi Tzadok's father and Abashol ben Botnis. Shepakeku es hama'or bitfiach. They stopped up a window with a pail. So they wanted to measure the window. So they stuck a pail in the window. Remember, their windows are, you know, open. It's not like there's a glass pane. It's just a hole in the wall. So they put a pail in it. V'kashru es hamakeda begemi, and they tied the pail with a reed. Leidaim yesh begigis poseach tefachim lav, to see whether it had a tefach-sized opening or not. I'm not getting into the specifics of this. There's a lot to talk about in terms of the case itself, clarifying its nature. It doesn't matter for our purposes. The point right now is they tied it with a reed. So on that, on the Gemara, on that Mishnah, Rashi makes the comment in source number 3. Lahachi nakat gemi. This is why they specified that they tied it with a reed, as opposed to just saying they tied it. It's specifying a reed. Why? Sheroi lamacho behema. First of all, it's fit for use as animal food, and therefore it's not mukta. It could have been animal food on Shabbos. And number two, velo mivdalei lios kesher shel kayama. You also don't leave it there as a permanent knot, diminatek kisheyavesh, because it breaks when it dries out. This is some kind of a reed that's not a strong reed. It will wither, and when it withers, it's going to fray, and that'll be that. So therefore, this is not considered a permanent knot. Clear? That's my press. This is, sorry? Yeah, that was Rashi, number 3, yeah. So the question you have to ask yourself, though, is the question that some of you started to ask just now, which is, what defines permanent? When you talk about a permanent knot being a problem, what defines something as permanent versus temporary. So you could have two different approaches, and you articulated both approaches. One approach is it lasts for a particular period of time that we call permanent. Right? Whatever that period of time is that we define as permanent, that's permanent. So 24 hours, 7 days, fill in the blank. Whatever it is that we call permanent, that's the definition of permanent. If it lasts that long, now you have a problem. That's sort of the intuitive approach to what permanent means. However, the other approach, and I think it was Abby who said it, is that it lasts as long as you need it to last. That's inherently called permanent. Clear? Yeah. The first approach is it's permanent because it lasts a long time. However we define a long time, 24 hours, 7 days, whatever it is. Yeah. So according to definition number 2, that will be correct. Either definition can be stricter or more lenient. Right? Let's do this on the board. Make sure that it'll be clear. Yeah, this is driving us. Okay. So you have two possibilities. Either that it is a long-term knot, however we define long-term, whether we say that's, again, a week, 7 days, a day, I should say, or 7 days, those are standard numbers for, you know, permanence. So that's one option. The other option is as long as you need it to be, as long as necessary. So you could define, let's say we define long-term as 7 days, okay? Let's say we work with that. And let's say as long as necessary is 3 days. So in the event that you have a knot that lasts 4 days, according to this definition, is it kesher shel kayama? No. According to this definition, is it kesher shel kayama? Yes. But let's say you don't need it to be 4 days. Let's say as long as necessary is actually 2 weeks. As long as necessary is. I brought a pen. I did not think to bring an eraser. Don't have an eraser. Cross the dolos. No. Okay. That's all right. Thanks. We'll worry about it later. But let's say as long as necessary. Just do it without an eraser. Is 23 days. There we go. And I have a knot that is going to last for 8 days. Hanukkah's coming up. I have an 8-day knot. Long term? No. As long as necessary? Long term, yes. It is long term. As long as necessary, definite? No. Then it's not. So it's not that one of these definitions is stricter or more lenient. It all depends on what you're actually, what your definition of as long as necessary is. If as long as necessary is less than the long term, then this is the stricter one. If it's longer, then it's the more lenient one. Clear? Okay. So this second approach, that it's as long as necessary, is found in the writing of a contemporary rabbi in Israel, a good name to be aware of when you're dealing with medical halacha issues, Rabbi Nissim Karelitz. So he says the following. You may remember that the Chazon Ish, who was the biggest name in halacha in Israel in the middle of the 20th century, his last name was Karelitz. So he's not a son. I have this memory of him having adopted that last name, but I don't remember the story behind the relationship between the two of them. But Rav Nissim Karelitz says, Kesher hanames me'elav. If you have a knot, he's dealing with the stitches case. If you have a knot that dissolves on its own, like is found today in our hospitals, they join parts of the body via threads that dissolve on their own. B'makom she'ein bo chashash ha'pikuach nefesh, assuming you're not dealing with a life and death case, because life and death cases are a different story altogether. So you're not dealing with life and death. Nira she'yesh lidon bazet, then there's room to discuss. Da'akesher chashiv kesher shel kayama. The knot is called a permanent knot. Kaven shehu letzorech, because it is needed, calls man shetzarech lekesher, as long as one needs the knot. Veino omid lahatira, when you're not going to untie it. So his argument is, even though it dissolves, it's still considered to be a permanent knot. That's the argument that he makes. He also raises other issues, but I don't want to go into the other issues. I'm sticking to the to this particular one. So the this is a legitimate argument. Now, some argue that permanent is actually about the knot and not about the material. That permanent is about the knot. It's not about the material that makes up the knot.
Like how you
tie it? Essentially, yes. But what we're saying, and this is the key point, is if the knot lasts as long as the material lasts, then it's permanent. If the material is going to dissolve, but the knot lasts as long as the material is there, that's considered a permanent knot. So it's not about long term. It's not about as long as necessary. It's about, does the knot endure as long as the material itself endures, or are you going to undo it first? So that's where we're going. That's where we're going with this.
I'm a little confused.
If you're only a little confused, I'm not doing my job. I will try harder. Yes.
So you're saying that if the knot that you made to tie the stitches stays there, then it's supposed to stay there, but it's...
If the knot is going to last as long as the material itself lasts, in other words, you used a particular material that is going to fall apart after fill in the blank time, and the knot is going to remain in that long, then the knot is considered permanent.
So, like, not dissolving stitches? Or dissolving stitches?
Well, it would apply to dissolving stitches, because the knot stays in as long as the material is intact. Yeah, Bailey.
What if you have a piece of clothing that already has a knot in it, but it's a permanent knot? Are you allowed to use it and unshop it? If you're just not allowed to tie it, unshop it, that will potentially be a...
Oh, so you're not asking a stitches question. You're just asking a broader kosher problem.
Yeah.
Right, so this is a good question in terms of how, you know, what is your requirement? You know, someone wears a necktie, right? Do they have to now tie it before Shabbos and leave it in all Shabbos long? Are they allowed to untie it Friday night and then tie it again Shabbos morning? So it's a good question, but I want to stick to this for now, but maybe before we wrap up, we'll come back to it. Yeah. Why would one need to get them out on Shabbos?
Like, I don't know. Don't you have to... I mean, I've never had stitches. Don't you get them out, like, after, like, a certain amount of days and letting that day fall?
Yeah, but I don't think it's that precise that it needs to be on that day. So, some argue, like I was saying, that permanent is about the knot rather than the material. Let's see the Rambam. The Rambam is based on a Gemara in Shabbos. The Gemara talks about, I didn't bring you the Gemara, I just brought you the Rambam, but the Gemara talks about tying a pail to a well. And it says that tying a pail to a well is not allowed. That would not be okay. However, tying up a cow is okay. This is Shabbos Kuf Yud Gimel, for anybody who feels like looking it up in the original. The tying up a cow is okay because it's not an enduring knot. It's not shel kayama, and it's not ma'ase uman. It's not a craftsman's knot. It's this very loose type of a knot that just anybody makes. So what the Gemara is saying, and I'll draw it on the board just to make it a little more clear, is tying to a well is not allowed, but tying up a cow is allowed. This is okay. This is not okay. The reason why tying up the cow is okay is because it is not a permanent knot. And because it's a casual knot, it's not a professional knot.
What does enduring knot mean?
Well, that's what we're discussing, right? We've given a couple of different definitions.
But enduring is permanent? Like it's just
yeah, moment. Enduring and permanent, I'm using this. Yes, two different words for the same thing. Sorry.
Okay.
Toba. Would tying up the cow be considered trapping? So I think not, because you're able to always catch the cow. Cows don't like, I mean, what do I know about cows? But my understanding would be that you're able to hold your cow whether it's tied up or not. So therefore, you're not adding anything. Trapping, by definition, is where the animal is not available to you, not something that you're able to just grab and hold on to, and then you do something to make it accessible to you. So, you know, the bird, let's say, is flying around, and then you put it in the cage. Once it's in the cage, now it's accessible to you. It's in the room, you try to get it here, and it flies over there. You're not able to get it. That's the difference between that. But with the cow, you know, it's standing here. It says moo. That's all it does. It's not harder for me to get to before I tie it up. I tie it up because I want to go inside the house and talk to somebody, and I don't want it to walk away. Yeah.
So are you allowed to, like, tie up your dog on Shabbos, let's
say? So this would be a good question. According to this, I mean, there are two issues at hand. One issue is whether a dog is muktza. In general, living animals are muktza on Shabbos. There's a lot of discussion about pets, service dogs, not going to the full discussion right now. But that's one issue that you would need to address. Less of an issue with cows, because people tend not to move cows. Cows move themselves. But when it comes to tying up the dog, you know, I think the way a lot of people have it is that there's just like a leash that they can, you know, they're making a knot. But if your knot is not permanent and it's, you know, it's a casual knot, it's not a professional knot, then you don't have a knot problem. They don't have that as an issue. So, look at what the Rambam does. The Rambam writes in number 5, V'koshrin deli b'meshicha o b'avneid v'chayotzei bo avalo b'chevel. He says, if you wanted to tie the pail to the well, you could use string, you could use a belt, you could not use a rope. The rope is something that you leave there, and then you've got a permanent situation. V'chevel shaya kashur bepara koshro be'evus. If a rope is tied onto a cow already, you could tie the other end to the trough. Haya kashur be'evus, if it's already tied to the trough, koshro bepara, you're allowed to tie it to the cow. Avalo yavi chevel mitoch be'sau v'yikshor bepara u'be'evus. But we don't want you to bring a rope from scratch to tie it up. That we don't want you to do. Vim haya chevel gardi. But if it's a weaver's rope, shemuter latal talo, that you're allowed to move, that's not a muktza issue. Harezem mevi v'kosher v'paro ubevus. You're allowed to tie it to the cow on the trough. What in the world is Torchiner talking about? All this stuff about wells and weaver's ropes. So the key line is what's coming next. Mibnei shekol elu haksharim maise hedyot hein. All of the knots that we're talking about when you're tying up the cow in this way are a normal person's action. They're not a professional type of a knot. Anybody does this. Ve'einan shel kayama. And they're not lasting. They're not enduring. They're not permanent. All those words that I keep using to translate kayama. This is not a permanent knot. Elapam kosher pam matir. Sometimes you tie it, sometimes you untie it. Ulefichach muter liksharas an lechatchila. Therefore, you're allowed to tie it lechatchila. Shira. Why would a farmer not be tying it professionally?
Because don't they do this all the time and it's not casual?
Right. So I think it's a good question. I think the answer would have to be that our definition of whether it's professional or not or otherwise isn't so much about the person who's doing it as the way that you do it. In other words, you know, a sailor ties knots professionally. That doesn't mean that every knot that a sailor ever ties is automatically a professional knot. You know, the sailor needs to take something to the store and he puts something in a bag and he ties the bag closed. He just does something casual. So I think that's really the issue, is that the farmer is not making the kind of knot they would make if they were doing this professionally, it's just like, yeah, I need to leave the cow here for a few minutes, so I'm just tying it up with a rope for now. Okay? Clear? Tovia, you look confused.
No, I was just thinking, like, why would you be in a situation?
Well, if it's eating from the trough and you want to walk away and then come back later and make sure it's still going to be there, right? That would be an example. So the Rambam says tying it to the trough is okay, but tying the pail to the well is not okay. And the reason why the cow is okay is because, as I wrote on the board, this is not a permanent knot and it's a casual knot. So the Ravid looks at the Rambam and he says, I don't understand. The same thing is true regarding the pail that you tie to the well. What's the difference? The Ravid says in source number 6, quoting the Rambam, these knots are not professional knots. Amar Avram, the Aleph is Amar Avram. That's where the Ravid's comments begin. Amar Avram, his name is Avraham ben David. So Avram says, Zehatam eno maspik. He says that explanation that the Rambam is giving, that when you're dealing with the cow, it's not permanent and it's casual, he says that's an insufficient explanation. Is the knot on the pail that you tie to the well, is that professional? You're telling me you can't tie it to the well because that's going to be professional? That's not the professional knot. And not only that, it's not permanent. Very often it's a reed rope that we're using with the well. So your differentiation to say the well is no good, the cow is good, is nonsense. Ella hatam shuchas alea shema tishaver bekoach hapara ubevade lo yaniach osa yom shalem. He says, that's not what's going on here. He says, permanent means just how long you intend to leave the knot in place. And when you tie up a cow, cows are very strong. This rope is not going to last. You tie it up for now, that's fine. But sometime soon, the cow is going to start pulling, and that rope is going to snap. And he says, therefore, it's not going to, it's not considered a permanent knot. You're not leaving it there for a day. Aval b'dali yaniach oso yom o yomayim. But a pail, you sometimes leave in for a day or two. Umishamachi gazrinon, and therefore, we're gonna prohibit it. So the Ravid's read is that this is straightforward. The Ravid is not complicated. The Ravid is simply saying the difference between the cow and the well is with the cow, you really know it's not permanent. It's not about the physical nature of the knot. It's just you don't leave it in there long term. Whereas with the well, you do. That's the Ravid's argument.
Can you say that one more time? Sorry.
The argument of the Ravid is that it's not about the quality of the knot, it's about how long you plan to leave it in. It's basically like approach number one that we saw before, right? The idea that it's how long this is going to be in. So the Ravid says that when you tie up a cow, it's not going to be tied up for a day even, because cows pull the rope. You know when you tie it up that it's not going to be so. When you tie it to the well, it's going to be in longer. The Ravid's point, this is what I want to make sure you get out of this. The Ravid's point is like approach number one. It's about the long-term character of it. He says when you tie up a cow, it's short-term. When you tie up a pail, it's long-term. There's no such thing as tying this cow long-term. That's not happening. Ella.
What does he define as long-term, short-term?
So look at his language. He says even a day.
So like maybe before Shabbos ends, or
not necessarily? Not necessarily. He just, lo yaniach osa yom shalem. You're not going to leave it in for a full day. No.
But this, I feel like it's a little bit different.
Yeah.
You're saying that the intention is long-term.
Correct.
It's long-term.
Right. It's not about how long it could last. It's about how long you're going
to
leave it in. Correct. what happens if I intended to leave it in short term and then I went away and forgot about it and left it in longer? That's what you're asking?
I was just like making the difference that it's not exactly on time, it's just similar, but it's not really on time.
Okay. So add in intent, long-term intent. If you, yeah, I hear that. Yeah.
Who's the rabbi? Like, how's he able to, like, kind of change it?
Okay, so the Ravid, I mean, there were three people named Abraham ibn Daud, who all wrote. This, I believe, is the second Ravid. I think it's the second. Not maybe it's either the first or the second, but I think it's the second. So, so he is sort of the main. Not rival, because he's not. The main attacker of the Rambam. The Rambam writes X, the Ravid disagrees. That's his job. Sometimes he disagrees very, very sharply. He was Spanish. And that kind of culture that you see in the Spanish Mefarshim, in Halacha, and on Tanakh, and it's that kind of a culture. So he'll just, disagree outright and say the Rambam is just wrong. Absolutely wrong. Not that long. Not that long, within a century after the Rambam. He's 13th century, I believe. Some of the most famous comments of the Ravid, there's a discussion about the Korban Pesach and how to handle parts of the Korban Pesach. And the Rambam says, this is what you would do. And the Ravid says, if we had a Beis HaMikdash and someone would bring me that, I would throw it on the ground. The Rambam says that it is... heresy to think that God has a physical form. And the Ravid says, people who are much greater than you disagreed. The Ravid is very, very blunt. Yeah. Chariv is sharp. He's sharp and blunt at the same time, yes. And that's not quite the way he says it regarding the belief in God having a physical form. I ain't sure. Glad to see it. But in any case, the Ravid comes along and he says the distinction the Rambam is drawing doesn't fit. It's not about what the Rambam said, about whether there's a casual knot, not a casual knot. He says no. What we're talking about is the intent for how long it will be left in. That's what matters. You intend to leave it in for less than a day, that's not permanent. You intend to leave it in for a couple of days, that's permanent. Which is, again, what I meant with this first approach. It's about, is it a long-term knot or not? Clear? Are we're getting this? Okay. Along comes the Magid Mishnah and challenges the Ravid, and that's source number 7. This is the last hard part. After that, everything today is easy. So, if you take a look at the Magid Mishnah, he says... when he says it's not enduring, because it's a reed rope, he says that's surprising. He says calling something a permanent knot, an enduring knot, is not about the quality of the rope. That's not what it's about, but rather, I'm just looking at my own translation here. I did something odd in my translation. Ella b'mahus hakesher ulamasha kosherin oso. There should be words that are missing here. Sorry about that. The translation should read: is not about the quality of the rope, but the nature of the knot. And then you resume in the translation. And why one ties it. It doesn't change the point that we're going to get to, but it's just not an accurate translation. So the way the line should read, just to make sure I say it clearly, he says, for enduring knot, this term in enduring knot, is not about the quality of the rope, but the nature of the knot and why one ties it. Clear? So I think the idea is that a regular knot wouldn't. In other words, a regular knot really wouldn't have that kind of strength to it. It would come out sooner. One of the things that I wonder about with this, and it comes up in a couple of areas of halacha, is the difference in terms of the materials that we use when we tie something and what they're talking about. They're talking about a chevel, which is a thick rope. You know, it's not like when you tie your shoes with a shoelace. Try tying, you know, a thick rope in a non-professional way, and it's going to come out. It's just the material won't hold. So that's the question, is how do you apply it to a... stitches are thinner. Less likely to come out on their own, even if it's a regular knot. It's an interesting question. I want to think about that. I don't know. It's a good thought. So the Magid Mishnah says, Ula Dvarav, within his words, according to what he is saying, what the Rambam is saying, Ein kesher shel kayama ela bedavar chazak harbe sheyamod zman zmanim. He says an enduring knot is only something that is strong and is going to last a long time. But he says that's not necessarily so. What he is saying is like Rabbi Karelitz. What he is saying here is that permanence is not about the material that you used for the string. Permanence is about the knot itself, why you tied it, the nature of the knot itself. So if the knot is going to last as long as you need it to last, that's a permanent knot. And I don't care that the material is going to dissolve. If all I need is for it to last for 4 days, and it lasts for 4 days, that's permanent. Are we clear? Yeah, Naomi.
I don't see why contradictions.
Yeah. What do you mean? So you said Ravid or Rambam? Ravid. So the Rambam took the Ravid took the position that a knot is only going to be considered a permanent knot in the event that it's going to be left in for a long time. Right? That was what he said. He said the knot that you tie the cow with is going to break apart today. The knot that you tie the pail with is going to last a day or two. He's saying it's about how long this is going to be in. The Magid Mishnah is telling me, don't go based on whether the material is going to fall apart or not. It's about, are you tying this to last as long as the knot is needed? Why one ties it? That's what he's focusing on. So the question is, how do I view permanent here? So that leads to a comment by Rabbi Yitzhak Zilberstein in his Chashuke Chemed. I didn't bring it on the sheet. I had mercy and I said enough already. Rabbi Zilberstein says that because of this, it would be better. Well, let me take one step back before you say Rabbi Zilberstein. Let's ask you now, based on what we've said, these two definitions that we have for what is considered an enduring knot. Okay? I've got on the one side, long term, and this is the position of the Ravid. And I have on the other side, as long as it is needed to be, lasts however long its function is, which is the Magid Mishnah, and which is Rabbi Karelitz. Right. So I think I was folding that into this, the as long as necessary. I didn't really. Right. I don't think I said it as clearly as I should have. I will put that in with the as long as necessary, because you use a material that will be as long as you need it to be. So, dissolving stitches, will the Ravid view them as permanent? Bless you. No? What does it depend on? How long it lasts, and how long long-term is, right? Meaning, we haven't given a good definition for what the halacha means when it says long-term. If long-term is just 1 day, dissolving stitches last longer than 1 day, right? So it'll depend. But according to the Ravid, there's a better chance that dissolving stitches are a good thing. Whereas, according to the Magid Mishnah, Rabbi Karelitz, will it matter whether the stitches dissolve on their own or you have to remove them? It makes no difference at all. Because when they put in dissolving stitches, they don't put in dissolving stitches saying, and then you'll come back to me when they dissolve, and I'll have to put in more stitches. Right? They're as long as you need them to be, as long as necessary. So dissolving stitches don't help if you take this approach. So Rabbi Yitzhak Zilberstein, who is a major authority in halacha today in Israel, he says, better to use dissolving stitches than regular stitches. Because at least you'll satisfy the Raifid. That's his argument. Yeah. Potentially, yes. When we talk about, and I don't think it's going to be this semester, I think it'll be next semester, we have to talk about human dignity as a factor in all of these calculations. So the issue of a scar which could be embarrassing for somebody will become a discussion at that point. And the answer is it may well matter, depending on whether what you're doing is a de'oraisa or a de'rabanan. To put it in a nutshell, human dignity, where it's a legitimate concern of them being embarrassed, will override their abundance.
So, like, even, like, without this, like, let's say, like, someone has a cut on their forehead, and, like, they have to get stitches,
Someone might write a best-selling, you know, series of books about them. Yeah.
The long-term ones would be worse or better than getting the dissolving ones, but, like, it would make the scar less visible. So, like, would it, none of this would matter, like, in that terms, like, if it would be good for their abundance?
If they, I'm not sure I understand the question.
Like, if they choose, like, oh, like, the dissolving stitches, which you might need a permanent knot for, or whatever, might be a problem, would they get to just, like, pick whichever one they want? Because the scar might be so bad that, like...
So, in the event that one type of stitching will be better than the other in terms of what's going to be left as a scar, and that would be an embarrassing thing for somebody to have, is to, you know, to have that kind of a scar... Then yeah, as long as what they're doing is a derabanan, then yes, that will matter. So right now it sounds like, and this is what Rabbi Zilberstein thinks, dissolving stitches don't solve the problem for everybody. They do solve the problem for the Raifid. Right? That's what we're saying so far?
But they might not even.
Sorry?
He said they might not even.
But they might not even. And that's where I get to my last source in this discussion, which is source number 8. From the Cleveland Clinic, which is one of the major medical centers in the United States. It usually takes 1 to 2 weeks before absorbable stitches dissolve. These stitches can last for a few months, depending on how your body heals. So you may not even be satisfying the Raifid. Right? This whole discussion about dissolving stitches may not help you at all. You follow? So that's, you know, that's a point to consider as well. The bottom line will be that in terms of stitches, you are definitely much better off if there's a non-Jew who is able to do this, as opposed to a Jew doing it. That's for sure. Clear? Yeah. Correct. We didn't give a real definition of how long. We noted the Ravid, who seems to think that a couple of days is already long-term. There is a potential view that up to a week might be considered long-term. I don't know of anyone who says anything longer than that. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to give you like a 2-minute break to just breathe because we're not going to get to a quiz today, and you need some kind of a breather. If you have questions, you can ask me questions. Otherwise, just take a 2-minute break, and then we'll resume. I mean, the rest of what we're going to do today is actually, you know, again, pretty straightforward. The next issue is very straightforward, actually. It's the issue of hotza'ah. Hotza'ah means? Right, carrying, transporting, moving an item from point A to point B. You know that we're not allowed to carry things from a private domain to a public domain or vice versa. What about having a bandage on your skin, bandage or a band-aid? You go outside the Eruv with a band-aid or a bandage on your skin. Is that a problem of Hotzah?
No.
No? Why not?
Part of you.
Is it part of you? It's on you.
You put it on before Shabbos started and it's
yeah.
not...
I feel like it's
and
like
something
you need.
Like sunscreen.
Mm-hmm. You need to not get an infection. If you have an open cut and you're going outside,
it's like wearing shoes.
You can get some kind of bacteria in it.
Ah, right. So leave aside the point about it being protective. We're going to come back to that. But it's ostensibly not different from any other piece of clothing. Right? You wear socks. You wear shoes. You wear a bandage on, you know, it's, I wouldn't give the sunscreen example because it's not, it doesn't get absorbed into your skin, it's just a band-aid. Yeah?
But I thought for Arab, you're not allowed to wear, like, you're not allowed to wear something that you don't usually wear. Like, I remember in Poland, they're like, you can't wear jewelry that you only wear on Shabbos because it's not really part of your...
So this is where we get to the issue. This is the question. Not so much, like, jewelry per se, but the issue of something which you might take off to display to somebody. In other words, if somebody has a piece of jewelry, to use that example, which they see a friend and the friend looks at it and admires it and they take it off to show them, that's where you run into trouble. So one is not supposed to wear something outside of an Eruv which they might display. So if you take a look at source number 9 on the sheet, the Mishneh Berurah talks about this, about having a bandage on Shabbos when one was walking outside of the Eruv. He quotes you the Bir Agra, which is the Vilna Gaon's commentary on the Shulchan Aruch. Ubir Agra Kasav, Dildas HaRambam, he says, according to the Rambam, Eino Asur Bechut Umeshicha, Kiim Kishakarcha Wal HaMoch Usfog Latzezbo, Demishum Dechashivi Lo Batli. He says, there's no issue of going out with a string on you unless they tie it to a cloth or a sponge to go out with it. And there what he's talking about is that's actually a carrying issue. That's not really relevant for us. I wouldn't get hung up on that first part. Ava al hamaka mamash, but on the wound itself, on an actual wound, afilu haya karuch chut umeshicha ushar davar chashuv, even if you tied something that is valuable to it, but it has a bandage, mutar latzeis bo. You're allowed to go out with it on the wound. The after eno mirape, even though it isn't healing in and of itself, mikomakam hare mo'il shalo yisaret hamaka. It protects to make sure that the wound is not going to get scratched. Ve'alkein lo havi masui, and therefore it's not considered a burden. You're not carrying something separate. It's considered to be protective of the wound. And in addition to being protective of the wound, you also don't remove it for display. He doesn't really get into that, but you don't remove it to show to somebody because it's protecting the wound. So, Hotza'a, the case that I would have been worried about with transporting things, would have been, you're transporting the band-aid. But, because it's protecting the wound, it's considered to be like clothing that you're wearing on the wound for its protection, and it's not a concern, and it's not something that you're going to show somebody either, because it is because it you need it in order to protect the wound. You're not going to take off the band-aid to show somebody. Yeah, Naomi. Will you really do that? Is that a thing?
Yeah.
Really? That's interesting. So then you have a separate problem, which is, you know, the, you know, well, yes, but the problem is the band-aid itself. I guess if it's just attached to skin, then you're okay. Right? I was thinking of the issue in terms of reattaching the band-aid. But, is that a thing? Okay. Then don't go outside an Eruv with it. That's what I would say. If it's really true that you might, you know, end up removing it to show to somebody, then no, don't go outside the Eruv with it. Yeah.
If you, like, you would usually, I don't know, have to show someone, like, you'll just go outside the Eruv and say, I won't now.
So that's harder, because if this is really something that people just do automatically, that's where we're concerned. That's where you have this, you know, rabbinic concern of don't wear things that you might want to display.
Is that like gloves? Like people say don't wear gloves.
Is that a thing?
Yeah.
Hmm. So if it's true that people remove gloves when they're, you know, when they meet somebody, then yes. It, you know, I mean, usually you're wearing gloves because your hands are cold. You don't want to remove gloves. But I suppose it depends on your situation and what the, you know, what people actually do. That would determine it. Interesting. Okay. This is a sort of thing which I could see changing depending on the circumstance, and you have to know your circumstance. Okay. The next issue is the issue of coloring, soveya. So the Torah prohibits malachos. One of the malachos is coloring things. This will not apply in the stitches discussion, but it will apply if we're talking about putting a bandage or a band-aid on a wound that is bleeding, because the blood is going to color the materials. Got it? The core question here, yeah.
So would you not be allowed to wear new Shabbos shoes on Shabbos, if like, they can give you blisters and you like be bleeding, kind of? Because like it could color like your socks or color like your shoes.
That's interesting. Don't wear new shoes lest you get a blister, which pops and thereby ends up coloring your socks. That's an interesting idea. I would say, in general, it's a good idea to avoid blisters, but not for that reason. I wouldn't go that far. I'll tell you what. Why don't you first see the discussion we're going to have about coloring, because it will impact your understanding of the case that you're giving. Yeah.
Doesn't the blood like ruin the bandage and band-aid and blood?
Good. Isn't this a bad type of coloring? This is not a good type of coloring. Yeah. What about you spill grape juice on the table? Not that any of you ever did that, but somebody in your house may have at some point spilled grape juice on the table, and you want to take the napkin and mop it up. Isn't that the same problem? Are you, in fact, not allowed to clean up the grape juice? Uh-oh, yeah.
Also, you're, like, throwing it out, maybe. Like,
and therefore?
Like, I thought if it's not, like, permanent, what you're coloring, if you're going to get rid of it. Also, it's not, like, what you intend. Like, you don't want to color.
Right. So the issue of intent may be a part of the discussion, except that it's a guaranteed result, which generally means that it doesn't help you, right? Unless it's a guaranteed result that you don't like, but you don't care whether the napkin gets, you know, mm-hmm. colored. So the answer really is you have to go back to two different ways to understand coloring. There are two different ways to understand the prohibition against coloring. One way to look at it, and I think this is the way I hear some of you talking about it, is coloring something in a way that improves it. And in that case, I'm only performing a malacha if it actually improves the thing that I'm coloring. However, the other way to look at it is creating color at all. I'll give you an example. Separate malacha of Shabbos. We're not allowed to write on Shabbos, right? Everyone knows that. What's the definition of writing? Sorry?
Two letters,
right? Writing two letters. What if I write two letters that are completely and totally meaningless for me? I wrote two letters. Am I allowed to do that on Shabbos? No. So maybe the same as way that I'm not allowed to write two letters on Shabbos, even if they're meaningless to me, I'm also not allowed to color, even though the coloring isn't improving whatever it is that I'm actually coloring. Maybe that's the argument that one would make. So here I turn you to source number 10. I think I've mentioned before Rabbi Reuven Ribiat and his book, The 39 Malachos, his four-volume set. Okay. So he brings both possibilities. He says, in the view of many poskim, source number 10, negative coloring, right, meaning coloring that's bad, such as staining, does not comply with the basic premise of tzoveya, which entails a constructive aesthetic coloring effect. Coloring that you're liable for is if it improves the product. However, Other poskim question whether the exemption of derech lichluch, which we're going to talk about, truly exists within the premise of tzoveya. Don't worry about that sentence yet. We're going to explain it. They argue that any lasting coloring effect is tzoveya, whether it is an enhancement or a detraction of the garment or item as a whole. As long as it is a permanent color, it's a problem. Whether it improves it, whether it doesn't improve it, doesn't make a difference. So you have both approaches. Yeah. What if you could actually wash it out? So this is a good question within the broader definition of tzoveya. We're already indicating here that a non-permanent coloring is not the problem of tzoveya. But what about where you would need to actually do something to undo it? It's sort of reminiscent of what we said about tying a knot. Right? You have a knot, you could untie it, but if you don't, it's going to stay in. So it sounds to me like the fact that you can wash it out doesn't necessarily help you. That's what it sounds like to me. Abby?
In the case of, like, let's say you use paper plates,
yeah,
and the food stains the plate, it is a permanent stain, like it's not being washed out of the plate.
Mm-hmm.
Is that allowed?
Somebody had cranberry sauce for Thanksgiving. So it dyes the plate. So that's all part of the same question, no? So in order to understand this and in order to address it, we need to look at the Shulchan Aruch in source number 11. This is exactly your case. This is the food case. Yesh Misha Omer, the Shulchan Aruch writes, there are those who say, Sha'ochel tutim o sha'ar peros hatsova'im, if somebody eats berries or other fruit that colors things, that you would have to be careful not to touch your clothing, not to touch your napkin. This is a cloth napkin they're talking about when they say a mapa. They didn't have paper napkins. Mishum tzoveya, that this is an issue of coloring. So the Shulchan Aruch brings, indeed, a concern. However, the Mishnah Brura says not so fast in source number 12. Mishnah Brura writes, V'yesh mekilin, some are lenient b'chol zeh in all such cases, kevin shu derech lichluch, because this is really just dirtying the napkin. This isn't coloring a napkin, this is making it dirty. V'yesh lismoch aleim hechadi efsher lo lizar bazeh. And he says, you can rely on that where there's a need and there's no way that you can avoid it. Where it's unavoidable, don't worry about it. So the Shulchan Aruch is taking the view that creating any color is in fact a problem. The Mishnah Brura is saying, not necessarily. It's really coloring that improves a product. That's the issue. Clear? Two different views. So when it comes to bandages, Rabbi Ribiad has a very interesting suggestion. In number 13, he says, a bleeding wound should be wiped on a white or light-colored cloth or towel, not a red towel. You follow that? A bleeding wound should be on a white surface, not a red one. Sorry, what, Rina?
But if it's a red towel, then you can't see that it's staining it, so don't you want to not stain?
Maybe, but clearly he has some other idea in mind, yeah?
Natalie. Well, I guess he's like taking the approach that if you use the red cloth, then it's not, like, that could, it's not dirtying it, so, like.
Right. It's not dirtying it, it's actually enhancing the color. You're making it redder. Obviously, it depends on what shade, right? There are different shades of red. But if it is something which is going to be reinforced in its color by the blood, then he's worried. So he says it will be better to use something that clearly is being dirtied by being used on the wounds. Use a bandage that is not being improved in this way. Now that's bandages. What about band-aids? So band-aids have a different heter. The reason why you're okay with a band-aid, and some of you mentioned this a little bit, I think it came up in the paper plate case, it comes up with napkins, not their napkins, but our napkins, paper napkins, is they're disposable. And the idea is that which is disposable is not something that people color, and therefore this is not called an act of coloring. So take a look in number, where did I put this? Yeah, I was going to bring it from another source also, but I didn't put it on the sheet. So yeah, number 14. Shmir Shabbos Kehilchasa. He's talking about using a paper napkin. And he says, Rav Neuwirth says, Ulenakos es hapeh b'mapit niyar. He says, cleaning the mouth with a paper napkin. Shadarka lehizarek achar shimush, which people normally throw out after they use it. Mutar b'chol ofen. That is certainly going to be permitted. So just like we say that when it's in a matter of dirtying, it's not called coloring, if the material that you're doing is a material that's disposable, that's also not considered to be an issue. That's not a concern. Plus, of course, you know, Band-Aids are not generally blood red. There's probably a reason why. They probably do want you to be able to identify the blood. I don't know. In any case, Band-Aids tend not to be blood red, so therefore you satisfy it on both fronts. Yeah, Julie.
I was going to ask a question about your...
Okay. Bailey.
You said that things that are disposable are usually not something people color, but don't you dispose of a piece of paper after you draw or write something on it?
So that's a really interesting question. Separate from the medical discussion, what about if you're going to draw on something... if you're going to dispose of it, then it goes back to the question of the knot that you're going to untie or the color that you're going to wash out. And I'll say that doesn't help me. The fact that I am choosing to dispose of it isn't sufficient. But what if it's something that's inherently disposed? Sorry? Wow, that's neat.
Have you ever heard of that?
No.
Yeah, I feel like people play with it.
For like the summer, I feel like scrub is really interesting. Cover it.
Yeah? I've never seen that.
Wash up.
Neat.
Yeah, it like becomes hard.
Okay.
On your finger, you don't rub it.
It's fascinating. No, not familiar. But can you give a case of something that's inherently disposable that someone would color on? Because the Band-Aid, the Lego bandage is interesting. I have to think about that one. And where that fits in halacha.
Those notebooks that, like, disappear.
Mm-hmm. Notebooks that disappear?
I don't know.
The disappearing pen, like, it might be
invisible. So disappearing ink is a different story. That's its own halachic question of disappearing ink. But we're talking about writing on a medium that is disposable. So I don't think the piece of paper is going to help you, because there's no difference between the quality of a piece of paper that you keep and the piece of paper that you throw out.
Right, which is why I'm saying that how come...
And it's like you press it.
You're like, so that's a different story. When you're drawing on a tablet, an Etch-a-Sketch, or you know, something like that, right, so that's a discussion of whether that constitutes writing at all, because the writing is not permanent. Right, that's a question of whether the writing is permanent or the drawing is permanent. But I'm not sure about the case. I feel like on a piece of paper, it's not going to help you. Like a piece of paper, because people can keep the piece of paper just as easily. It would have to be more of like coloring on a material that is going to deteriorate. You know, that itself doesn't last. Yeah. Right, so the question of whether you're allowed to frost a cupcake in the first place is really the challenge. Meaning, I'm not allowed to draw. That includes drawing with food. So there's a lot of discussion about this question. So right, so if you're not really drawing anything, you're just putting a layer on, then it's possible to argue it's not a design. It's not you didn't draw anything. So then your question becomes, it's coloring the food. So there is a whole discussion about whether coloring applies to food in halacha. There is a view that suggests that coloring is not relevant for food. This comes up the most famous case in which this comes up is the issue for the Seder, where there's a preference to have red wine because it's, you know, resembles either the blood in Egypt or because wine by definition is supposed to be red. Different explanations for why. What if a person really likes white wine? So there's a suggestion made of, well, just add a little bit of red and then it'll be red. But the question is, are you allowed to do that, or is that coloring food? So some argue coloring is not relevant for food, and therefore it's not an issue. But what they suggest is put the red in first and then add the white. And that way you don't have a visible change of color. You know, it may dilute it a little bit. So that satisfies that view. But to go back to your case, I think we would end up saying, but I'd really want to look it up before I give that as a definitive answer. But I think the answer would be that ain't svia ba'ochlin, that's not called coloring in general. I think so. I have to look up these liquid bandages because I haven't heard of that before, and that's sounds very cool, and it sounds like it adds a halachic question. So that'll have to come back with, see if I find anything, but also the Tzvi Ba'ochlin, the cupcake case. So what we're going to end up doing next time, aside from following up regarding liquid bandages, if I come up with anything, is we need to talk about the last malacha in your chart, which is korea, tearing something. Tearing we normally define as, we usually think of, as ripping things, right? I take a piece of paper and I tear it, that's korea. But keep in mind, just like we said that tofer applies when you join two things together, korea applies if you take two things that were joined together and you separate them without ever tearing anything. So the question that we're going to have to ask is, if you've ever put on a Band-Aid, and I assume people have, the Band-Aids come with a tab on them, right, to protect the adhesive. On Shabbos, you open the Band-Aid, you take the tab off of the adhesive. Is that a problem of korea? Got it? That's what we'll have to talk about next time, and then we get a quiz. So review what we did last time as well as what we did today. Thank you very much.